Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 60. Can you believe it? SSD State of the Union number 3. Here we go. Today, my guest is Nigel Poulton. How you doing, Nigel?
I'm doing pretty good, Rick. Thanks.
I'm great. Thanks for having me. No, not thanks for having me on, but thanks for being on my show. Nigel, you and I go way back, and we do a couple of current extracurriculars together. But Nigel, if you could you give everyone an intro of yourself?
Oh, dear me. So I'm a wannabe techie. I like the knobs and the bells. And I've worked in storage for, it's got to be around 15 years or something now. And I love technology.
That's a good way of putting it. You also have a pretty good blog, blog.nigelpoulton.com.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I don't update it as much as I probably should. And I wish that I could do more on it. But these days, to be honest, I'm preferring the podcast over the blog. It just seems more fun, more engaging, and more interesting.
Yeah, I'll give you that. I do both. For one, it's easier to record the podcast, right, and kind of cover a bigger breadth of technology. But you're a details guy, so when you do a blog, you really want to tear things up and go very deep, and so the podcast kind of allows you to kind of be a little bit more broad. I think that's another aspect.
It does, yeah, and I think as well there are a million and one blogs out there these days, mm-hmm. whereas there really aren't quite so many podcasts. So I think in general we probably reach people, or I reach more people through the podcast than I do the blog now.
Yeah, good point, good point.
Do you think blogs are a little bit yesterday, or?
You know, I probably hit more blogs than I would a podcast or a screencast or any mm-hmm. other new media, but that's only because I usually go for point solutions like, hey, what does this thing do, or how do you use this, or how do you do that? Very point solution, right?
Right. So would you search for something and come across a blog, or would you read a blog to find something? And I think that's maybe where it's differentiated. I find tons of useful information on blogs, but I dare say that I don't, out of habit, read any one or two blogs anymore. You know, I used to have a list of blogs that I read all the time. I don't have the time to do that now, but I still find great information when I do Google searches on stuff.
I go there via the search. I don't have an RSS reader myself. I never have done RSS. I do look at what people tweet, right? So if I see something of interest, oh, I'll go check out and see what that person that I believe is an expert in that topic is about. In fact, I was looking at just one today from Julian Wood, right? So, or Duncan Epping, right, in the VMware world would tweet something. If that's of interest, I'll check it out. But 90% of the time, it's via a search to try to, you know, explain something for me or solve a problem. But usually then I look at the results, and if it's a blogger I know, then, you know, I kind of pre-rank, you know, how those results are going to be processed. So, awesome. Everyone, Nigel is good people. That's all you need to know. Okay. Now, let's go on to our topic du jour. So, Nigel, I started a series where I'm really wanting to kind of focus on what I believe to be the next disruptive technology for the data center, and that's the solid-state disk. You and I conspire to do the InfoSmack podcast at times, and solid-state in a number of different ways have come up over there, but I wanted to talk with you kind of more privately about it, and you know, the other half of it is this is a series I've done, and you're the third that I'm going to talk to, third of three.
I feel the pressure now. The other guy is going to have been way better.
Well, Chris Evans was number two.
Oh, definitely then. Oh.
Well, the best part, and then Jason Perlow was number one. And the goal, Nigel, is that it's different perspectives, right? Everybody's going to bring different perspectives to, again, what I think is the next disruptive technology. And, of course, I'm curious what Nigel Poulton thinks.
Okay.
So as at the highest level, I mean, do you agree? Is it the next big disruptive technology to the data center?
I do, yeah. And I think along with probably a lot of people, we saw it coming quite a while ago. But when I saw it coming, I think the way I envisioned it unfolding is actually quite different to how it's turning out to unfold in reality. if I'm making sense there.
Well, yeah, because the small brain Ricketron will look at SSDs and just throw them on a bus, you know, like you would any other rotational storage, right? Swap them out and just not be very smart about it. But I think the way to go about SSDs is to use, you know, tools that are built specifically for that platform, you know, smarter software, smarter controllers, right? So what's transpired, in my opinion, seems like so far it's been pretty good, and I've been happy with the results. Honestly, in the enterprise technology world, for me, it's unseen. I haven't worked with anything yet. No hands-on any of these next-generation storage systems. I use an SSD in my laptop, but that really doesn't count. But how has it been different than what you've seen transpire?
Right. So I think, first of all, I probably do bring a different perspective then, because I've worked with it in the enterprise for quite some time now, across all of the major vendors, EMC, HP, HDS, NetApp. I've used it in all of their boxes. And while it does plug gaps and it does fix things and it does give improvements, they're very, very, at least in my opinion, at the moment, incremental improvements. And I'm probably talking about performance here. But the way I envisioned it was that, it may be a little bit naive of me, but that solid-state storage would come along and it would solve just about every performance problem that any storage architect or administrator has ever come across. And it certainly hasn't done that yet. We are seeing what I think are very, very generation 1 or version 1.0 implementations. We're seeing solid-state drives shoehorned into legacy disk arrays. And I'm not saying that they're legacy as in, you know, they're prehistoric or last year. They are still very relevant in today's enterprises. Sure. But they're legacy when you think that, well, if you take solid-state as the future, you know, the next generation of storage arrays will look very different. We won't be shoehorning into legacy architectures anymore. The architectures will soon be more defined and built around the idea of having solid state in there. So one of the challenges I see these days is, you know, you take a Symmetrix or a VSP or a whatever, a 3PAR, and you've got spinning disk in there, and then you throw a bit of solid state in there. You kind of salt it with solid state, if you will. Mm-hmm. And all the marketing messages is that you put a really small amount in there and you get all this performance. All of the active pages get moved up to solid state and it will just be a great world. And it just brings so many challenges, in my opinion. We have to really, really rethink how we design our storage arrays when we deploy them. So how much solid state do I put in? Do I land new LUNs on solid state, or do they live in a SATA pool for a while? And the performance that an application gets on day one will be wildly different to what it gets on day 60. And then we add new applications on day 61 and it starts skewing performance again. And it just, there are so many mindset changes that we have to go through to deploy on today's technologies that I just can't see that being the future.
Well, that's an amazing point, because the today technology's central piece of it, you know, if today I've made investments, right? You know, I've got those VSPs, those SVCs, those, you know, even on the smaller scale, I've got Equalogix or something like that, right? So the natural choice might be to add a tray of SSD, right? You know, that's, or, you know, maybe a couple of trays or whatever, and loop them into the pool like I provision everything else. But the management challenge seems to go up. Is that kind of what you're saying based on your real-world experience?
It is, yeah, and you're absolutely right. That is the way that we have to do it at the moment. But as soon as the application guys get wind that there's solid state in your Symmetrix that you've got or in your VSP or whatever it is, they suddenly assume that they're going to get wickedly amazing performance. And I don't know, within organizations it seems to give the wrong mindset. Oh, they've got SSD in there, so that box is going to fly now. And they don't realize that it's just assaulting and that not everybody else can occupy the space in solid state. So it just brings loads and loads of challenges. But you're right that we've got investments in existing technologies, and salting the solid state on there is not the worst thing in the world. It's good. It's just, I think when we look back in 5, 6, 7 years' time, we'll be like, wow, I remember when we used to build things like that. Gee,
yeah, yeah.
That was just ridiculous, wasn't it? Yeah. But, you know, if I can, Rick, on the same topic of investments, EMC released, I think they call it Project Lightning, or they did call it Project Lightning, their VF Cash,
right.
Just, you know, within the last week or two. And I wonder if that's one of the challenges that, or within that is hidden one of the challenges that Solid State will have, in that the incumbent vendors like EMC, and EMC are a great company, however, they have existing investments in real cash cows like Symmetrix and VNX and what have you, and they don't want to go out and cannibalize their own business.
Sure.
So when they introduce technologies like VF Cash, there's got to be a balancing act going on in the background in Hopkinton that says we've got to release this in stages, and we've got to make sure that we don't cannibalize on a major part of our business. So some of the messaging and what have you that is coming out of the traditional big iron vendors, if you will, is not really sometimes that conducive towards the movement towards the next generation. I'm not saying that they're stifling it, but the reality of the business behind it says that, you know, you can't just take a market where you're number one or number two and say, right, we're going to cannibalize that market.
Right. Well, the other thing is, you know, you have to have options, right? So one option is the cash card.
Yeah.
Another option is a tray of SSDs, right?
Yeah.
So you have to have those options. But yet another option, and this is where I think is the harder decision, and honestly, I don't even know if it comes down to dollars, but or pounds, as it would be, because do you introduce another platform, right? So if you're a single brand storage shop, right, everything's HP or everything's Dell, everything's EMC, whatever, do I say, wow, you know what, I really like what, you know, Tintree are doing, or I really like what Pure Storage is doing, right? These next generation, right, storage products that are kind of don't have that, you know, stigma that, you know, large experience, or I won't say experience, but that, you know, historical background in terms of the product line in rotational storage. These are built for the platform. You know, do you make the case to introduce something new? And I think a lot of people are thinking about that right now too.
Yeah, I think for a lot of companies, the answer to that question should be yes. If you want to be making your enterprise more flexible, if you want to be keeping pace with the leading technologies, just because you mentioned Tintree, if you want to be on the leading technologies in the virtualization space, they have one of the best stories there. Bring it back to high-performance storage. If you want to be delivering ultra-low latency to certain applications that will drive your business, you're going to have to, or you really should be looking at different options to your traditional vendors. You know, you might want to throw in, who knows, a Violin Memory.
Sure.
Or a Caminario, or even take the PCIe route and throw in an OCZ to you guys, or a Fusion IO or something like that.
Yeah, and again, the options are out there. And I have to say, it's very tough right now today to make these decisions, right? Because there's really a lot of different ways to go. And honestly, there's not much, you know, dare I say, like the old Cisco realm, right? Nobody ever got fired for buying Cisco.
Right.
You know, there's a certain amount of street credibility that you have when you say, oh, we're going with this storage company's offering. And it's one of those like six or seven that everybody's heard of, right? Your CIOs have heard of. Or, you know, that type of, you know, comfort level doesn't exist in this realm. There is no generations of success stories that these people grew up with to kind of base their, you know, the confidence in your decision. And by no means am I playing any type of favorites. I'm just really bringing some conversation to the decision I think a lot of people are dealing with. But
oh, absolutely. It takes guts.
Yeah.
Just from a, you know, it's not tried and tested, or it's not as tried and tested, but also it's a really, really dynamic space. So what is hot and looks great today will look very yesterday in maybe a year's time. And I don't think the traditional spinning disc market has been that dynamic. The solid state market is just littered with startups mm-hmm. that all have different angles, that all have different plays. And guess what? A ton of them are not going to be around in 2, 3, 4 years' time. So you are taking a big risk.
Yeah, understood. And there's also the other half of it. You're still going to need cheap and deep rotational storage. That need really doesn't go away. So then, you know, you might be kind of gravitated back to what you've been doing and just see what they have in terms of offering to the solid state space. It's a tough decision, but one thing that I think, and I'm going to ask you because you've got a lot of experience in a lot of situations, Nigel, is, you know, let's kind of refocus on the application, right? If we have applications that can only be made happy by, you know, these, dare I say, unaffordable storage systems, right? You know, we can make things go faster with storage, right? You can short stroke, you know, those little techniques have been done forever.
Oh, no, please.
But I'm just saying people do it,
right? I know,
right?
You're right.
People
yeah.
do it, right? If they don't want to buy, you know, like I'll take the SAS and SATA example. If you don't want to buy, you know, SAS drives, and I've known a lot of people who will buy SATA trays and then intentionally only use a slice of it just so you get that only 70 or 90 IOPS per drive, multiply it up, but nothing else is contending with those applications. People do it all the time. Flip that around. You know, we have this solid state environment. We've got these crap applications, these ridiculous applications that they might only, you know, do well in a solid state realm or especially if they're very large. I don't know. It's hard to change the app, but that might be a conversation we need to have also. You know, do we really need to be in the business of having apps with these types of requirements?
Changing the app is a real massive can of worms. I don't know. I don't want to sound like a pessimist or a glass half full guy here, but I don't know that we're ever going to do that. I look at things like Moore's Law and Intel chips, and maybe it's not Moore's Law anymore. We're working on adding cores rather than clock cycles these days. But we just seem to throw more and more infrastructure or faster and faster infrastructure at our problems, at our applications, at our crap applications, as you call them. And I think storage will be exactly the same. And it's one of the areas where I wonder. So bringing it back to EMC's VF cache of using the solid state PCIe card in a server as an extension of array cache is one way of doing it, but I think EMC's grander picture, you know, is having FastVP manage that end-to-end, so having, you know, really fast flash memory in a server, really fast flash memory in a Symmetrix, and then the other tiers as well, but managing it all as kind of a single entity. And I'm cool with that. But I don't think that the generic kind of sublun and caching algorithms that we have these days, I don't know that they particularly fit well with these crap applications that are out there. I really think, and I'm opening myself up to be embarrassed here in the future, but I think a lot of these crap applications, that they don't really work with caching algorithms that try and predict, right, what do we need to prefetch and which part of a LUN or of a volume are we going to stage? These, in my opinion, need more of a Fusion I/O approach or more of a Violin Memory or a Caminario where you just give them a LUN that is entirely SSD and you forget about it and you let it perform like the wind.
Well, you know, if we had the perfect stack, right, that would have the applications do prefetch or have the applications do, you know, predefined hotspot containment, right? You know, it's never going to be more than, say, 30% of my VMDK, like at the VM level. Like this application will never be hotter in more than 30%, right? And that's configurable ahead of time or something like
mm-hmm.
that. You
yeah.
know, like a fully integrated stack would work, right? So those tiering technologies could do it. But really, short of that, you're at the hour interval, right? And then you might have weird application situations where You know, if I go to this table, the database is great, and go to that one, well, not so great, you know. So,
yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's a tough realm right now, and I don't think that there's a silver bullet without ridiculous overspending.
Yeah, and I think that's the problem, that the cost has got to come down. And while the cost comes down as well, you know, speaking of some of the solutions out there today being very Generation 1 or version 1.0, you know, the next generation, in order to be truly disruptive, yes, the cost has got to come down. But also, it's got to be everything that today's existing enterprise storage solutions are, plus more. So they've got to offer non-disruptive code upgrades. They've got to offer copies, replication, and resiliency. But then over and above that, they need to add performance. They need to drop in performance less when you have a failure or when you're upgrading microcode. They need to offer more predictable performance. And they need to be more scalable. You know, the list could be as long as your arm. For them to be truly disruptive, the cost has got to come down, and they've got to do everything that the incumbent does today, plus a bunch more. And I think that is realistic. It's just not quite here today. I mean, Chris Meller had an article in the Register today saying about, you know, that Caminario has just recently released some of those features. But there are a ton of the SSD vendors out there that are not at that point yet. And it's not because they can't or they won't, but it's because they're so young and their technology offerings are so fresh that the R&D cycle and the number of engineers and developers that they've got doesn't give them the opportunity to write in non-disruptive code upgrades, for instance. But you got to have that if it's going to start replacing the incumbent. You can't just bring something in that's going to have your mission-critical T1 app on and give it all this fantastic low latency and then say, oh, guess what? When we take a failure, it just dies from a performance perspective. And I'm talking about, you know, a failure that it doesn't fail from, but that it rebuilds. But during that rebuild, it's killed.
Sure.
Or if we're going to have to upgrade code, we need to take the box offline. That's 1980 stuff. Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to name any names, Nigel, but there's a product I was working on recently. Not so recently, but you had to reboot it to change the time on the storage controller.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah.
I was not wild about that, especially because I just said okay without, you know, reading what it was telling me.
But you know what that is? That's engineers, right, working at a company, working on a storage solution and wanting it to be a great storage solution, ultra-performant, whatever it was, but not thinking about the everyday stuff.
Exactly.
That, you know, gosh, change the time, let's take it down.
Well, to be fair, you know, to write that list of, dare I say, enterprise features, right, it becomes a long list to make everyone happy.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, the way those types of products will think is like, well, I can put my effort right now today here at the things that will totally differentiate me, right? You know, smart tiering between the SSD and rotational storage or something. Put the engineering effort there. Nobody really cares about, well, I shouldn't say nobody really cares, but it's more important for me to do that than to do something that everybody else is already doing, right?
It's the classic engineer's dilemma, isn't it?
Yeah.
And of course, from a marketing perspective, what sounds better? Or we do deduplication, or we do non-disruptive code upgrades. It's the deduplication, isn't it? You know, it's getting all of the buzz and stuff. So
it's. You know, it's one of those things that there's a lot of maturity. I think you point that out, right? And that's, you know, I've been talking to the third expert, the last expert I'm going to be talking about this topic with, and that's actually something that didn't come up, right? The maturity of these are right at the edge of it, right? You know, it's going to take off. Dare I say the big storage companies get a hold of it, right? And then, you know, maybe they'll, you know, acquire some intellectual property of, you know, some of the new ways of doing it, and then it'll fit right in, maybe. Who knows?
There's
a lot to be seen. So let's transition to the next part of my podcast, Nigel, and this is the actual official gimmick. Okay, this is three views from you. I'm going to ask you three questions set once in the past, next in the present, and then lastly into the future. And this is Nigel the technologist. Nigel's a person, right? My goal is that everyone gets to know you a little bit. And everyone who's been on here the first time, they get these lines of questions, so you're up. So Nigel, as a technologist, what's the most interesting story or technical experience that you have from some point in your past that you can share with us?
Can I ask a friend? Can I phone a friend?
No.
You know what? It's bizarre. I consider myself really, really lucky that I think I've worked on some really, really interesting projects in the past. But they're just interesting to, like, a geek like me, right?
We're all geeks. That's part of the, like, admission process. Must be a geek to listen to this podcast.
Yeah. I mean, I think some of the biggest fun that I had was working on an Active Directory backup project in the past. And it just sounds dire in that description. But we were trying to back up Active Directory using disk array-based snapshots. And it should have worked so easily, but it didn't. And it turned out that, you know, we got it working in the end. And from talking to Microsoft and the disk vendor and the backup software vendor, we believe we were the first company in the world to ever accomplish it. But just to give you some perspective, right? So every company, every piece of backup software and every disk array vendor would support hardware snapshots of SQL Server, Exchange Server, probably SharePoint, all through the Microsoft VSS API.
Right.
Technically speaking, Active Directory can be backed up, well, is backed up via VSS, mm-hmm. and it shouldn't be a problem to hardware snapshot it. But Active Directory is usually installed on your C drive and is backed up as part of the system state backup, or the, you know, used to be at least with Windows 2003 when I was doing this project. So hard to snapshot a C drive with the registry on it because, you know, Windows is constantly updating the registry.
Right.
And we went across so many problems. Now, it's not a cool project, but I got to work with developers at Microsoft, developers at the backup company, who I won't name, and developers at the disk array vendor, who I won't name either. But it was awesome, Rick. And as a British guy, I don't use the word awesome very often. But it was just awesome getting to work with engineers from those three companies. It's not very often you get to do that, you know. And these are wickedly smart guys.
Yeah.
And it was just a great, great project to be involved in because I was working until 10, 11 p.m. at night. I was on a contract to get it in place. And I couldn't pull myself away from it. And I'd leave the office when the security guard kicked me out.
Nice.
And I'd get in the car to go home. And I'm trying to fix the problems in my head on the way home. And I'm jumping out of bed the crack of dawn the next morning to get back in the office. It was really cool from that perspective.
Outstanding. Interesting story. And if anyone's out there have a question about backing up your AD domain controller, talk to me. Anyways.
Yeah, I was going to say there are much better ways to do it now.
That's the end of my commercial for Veeam in this podcast. So, Nigel, what's going on in the present that you have the most passion for technology-wise right now?
Solid-state storage.
Sweet.
Now, in my last job that I had before the place I'm at the moment, we were going through an RFI, sorry, I was going to call it an RPQ, an RFI for high-performance solid-state storage array. And we brought three vendors into the lab and proof-of-concepted them. And it was very, very interesting. My boss and I were both geeks, and we were designing workloads that would hurt solid-state storage arrays. Because we would regularly POC traditional spinning disk arrays, yeah? And we had all these workloads that we throw against them that we knew would hurt disk arrays. Because quite often you'll find that when you put a disk array under a lot of stress, you start to see its warts. We had an issue in the lab once where we were nailing a disk array and we were getting like tons and tons of IOPS out of it. But at the same time, we then started cutting some LUNs. And the array fell over and it went non-responsive for about 25 minutes. And this was just fortunate it was in the lab, but it ended up you know, being escalated back to the vendor, and they wrote a code patch for it and stuff. So it just, it got us to realize that you put these things under stress, and that's when you start to see them creak. So we had to, when we were POCing the solid state arrays, we had to put a lot of thought into, well, actually, how do we make a solid state storage array creak? You know, misaligning the writes, what size should the write IOs be, and all that kind of stuff. That was really interesting, and that was how we came across some of the lack of maturity that I think we talked about earlier.
Wow, that's like scary IO, man.
That would be very interesting.
That'd be interesting. Yeah, that would be interesting. That would be fun. I want to do that when I grow up. So Nigel, into the future, what do you see, you know, technology wise that excites you most longer term?
Probably the James Webb Space Telescope.
Okay, what's that?
That's astronomy based, but okay. It's technology based. But no,
that's fine. Yeah, you'd be surprised some of the answers we've had on the show. But that one, I just don't know what it is.
No, it's cool. Technology wise, in like enterprise tech.
Yes, sir. Anything. A telescope. Tell me about it. I don't know about it. Now I'm curious.
No, so I'm not an expert on the James Webb Space Telescope, but it's a project that is coming under funding duress at the moment. You know, it's like, think of it as the next generation Hubble telescope.
Sure.
The Hubble telescope on crack, if you will.
Cool.
And the things that will potentially bring to physics and science is just phenomenal. You know, we're almost in a golden age of science. We're almost in a golden age of technology as well. But technology, with it being so, at least the technology that we work in being so commercially focused, it makes money for these vendors, yeah? So they can put money into it. Whereas I think science and physics and things at the moment, because the economy is not great, and because governments are slashing budgets on things like that. I mean, NASA is a great example at the moment. NASA is skint compared to how it has been. Considering we're in this golden age of being able to discover planets, you know, Kepler doing all that it's doing, it just sucks to me that we're actually skint. So we're in this golden age and the cash has dried up, whereas if we still had the cash, you know, dear me, the possibilities would be phenomenal. So I'm hoping that the economy improves so that we can start, you know, employing more money in science.
I understood. I'll have to look up that
James Webb's telescope.
I'll look that up. I'll put it in the podcast notes, even better. That way I won't forget. Hey, Nigel, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate your time. Thanks again.
No problem, Rick. It's been a pleasure.